Election College, episode 272, James S. Sherman.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Ben, we're out of the 1800s. You know, a little over a decade out of the 1800s, yet vice presidents, it's just tough. It's tough out there.
It's a real bad day or decade or, you know, century to be a vice president in the United States.
Yeah, and the saga continues. Yeah. The saga continues with James Schoolcraft Sherman. He is our 27th vice president, a.k.a. the vice president under William Howard Taft. In case you haven't heard about James S. Sherman, after this episode, you will have corrected that horrible error, and you will be educated and informed. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the education, right?
That's right. In case you forgot how to listen to a podcast. all right, so James Sherman, I'm going to call him Jimmy for now, was born in Utica, New York. And in the words of Dwight Schrute, we're going to burn Utica to the ground. I don't know why I had to say that, but just anytime an Office reference comes into my mind.
Oh, wow. If you're in Utica right now and you know who James Sherman was and he's very important to you, the rest of the country needs to be informed.
That's
and
right.
The Dwight Schrute reference, we're sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's, you know.
It's anyway. Insecurity.
So Sherman is actually, the family claimed that he was of the ninth generation of descendants from Henry Sherman, which that's also connected to Roger Sherman, who signed the Declaration of Independence, to William Tecumseh Sherman, who was a general for the Union during the Civil War. So he comes from a bit of a lineage, and I don't know that he has a chip on his shoulder, but it would be really easy to understand if he had. He does get an education at seminary, Whitestown Seminary, and then he goes to Hamilton College in Clinton, New York. And the guy knew how to not only debate, but speak. He was a good public speaker. He was great at defending positions. And of course, you know, it's only natural that after he graduates, he's going to study law.
Yeah, of course you are, because you're going to be vice president someday.
That's right.
And you need that. He practices with his brother-in-law, Henry Cookingham, and he also serves as president of the Utica Trust and Deposit Company, as well as the New Hartford Canning Company. That becomes a little important later on in his story, but he becomes the mayor of Utica at the age of 29. Hey, that sounds like another mayor I know. Ben.
Yeah.
You were 29 when you got elected, right?
That's correct.
And, oh my goodness, I could be talking to a future vice president.
I kind of doubt it, but it's possible. I don't know.
100 years from now, people are going to be like, Ben Smith.
Hey, my buddy.
Who the heck was that guy?
Yeah. My buddy told me I should look up the Wikipedia page called, Youngest Mayors in America or something like that. He added me to it. I'm
nice.
On Wikipedia now. Yeah.
You are famous and well on Wikipedia.
That's right. So there you go, guys. If you're scrolling around one of the most obsolete pages on Wikipedia, you'll find me.
Man, how many Wikipedia topics do you know personally? And now I know one.
Yeah. So in 1886, Sherman, or Jimmy, gets elected as U.S. Representative from the 23rd Congressional District. And he's a Republican. And he is there for a long time. He serves for 4 years. He takes a break for a couple years, and then he goes back for 16 more years, so a 22-year span. But this is a pretty challenging time for certain things in the Republican Party, and you know, they're all divided, and it's kind of a mess. Well, Sherman decides he's going to side up with William McKinley and the rest of the conservatives and defend the gold standard. Because remember, this is a huge issue at this point in time. We're talking about free silver versus gold standard, etc. He says, I will not stand for anything but the gold standard.
Yeah, and so he's quintessentially the guy who is influential for the conservative Republicans in the House of Representatives. Like Ben said, over 20 years in the House, right? And there he is. He's doing his thing. He serves as a chairman of the Committee on Indian Affairs from 1895 until 1909. There's actually a school, a Native American school, that's named after him. That's probably the latest claim to fame, other than this podcast episode to James Sherman. Anyway, he never holds a party leadership position. He's known by Henry Cabot Lodge as the guy who serves as chairman as, quote, the committee of the whole, which is kind of like saying you don't have an official leadership position, but we know you're a man of integrity and we respect you.
So in 1908, Sherman gets nominated as a Republican candidate for vice president. And of course, this is the ticket with William Howard Taft as well. And, you know, he's not really somebody that anybody would have picked out of a crowd, I guess is a good way to say it. He's kind of on the back burner. He's kind of in the background. I guess I should have said not back burner. And people recognize, though, that he has a pretty solid level head. He really balances out all the things that Taft does and says. He's also an Easterner, and that's important because Taft is a Westerner. And, you know, he's conservative. So when people look at Taft as being a little less conservative, they look at Sherman as being more conservative, and it works out together. And the Republicans, they don't have a hard time winning this at all. They win by a pretty comfortable margin. We talked about that back in the Taft episodes. And they get in office, and they're like, hey, we hate each other.
Nice. But, you know, Nellie's there, and she reaches out to, I'm going to use the nickname too, Ben.
Yeah.
Reaches out to Jimmy and his wife, Carrie. And what ends up happening is Taft starts to become more conservative. It's almost like the opposite of what you would think would happen. You know, it's not like I start walking your way and you start walking mine. I haven't quoted country lyrics in a long time.
I'm so happy about that, too.
Oh, well, there, I just did.
I know.
They didn't meet in the middle, neath a old Georgia pine or anything like that. No, Taft becomes more conservative and infuriates Roosevelt, who comes back and messes everything up for Taft and himself in 1912. But that's beside the point. Everybody is enjoying each other. It's like the bromance thing going on, you know, with the presidents and their VPs in these last several years. Mm-hmm. The president's like, you know what, Jimmy, he is so accomplished. He's charming. And the way he talks, it's like he's really friendly. They called him Sunshine in the House of Representatives. You know, they really thought he was at a really nice disposition, and it won Taft over.
It did not, on the other hand, win over Theodore Roosevelt, which Jason just mentioned. You know, he comes around in 1910, starts making some ripples with Taft. Of course, Sherman gets involved in that too, and Theodore Roosevelt goes, hey, I'm starting my own party. It's the Bull Moose Party, which is everything else aside, is like a really cool name for a political party, the Bull Moose Party. I mean, that's just, yeah, sorry. And basically when he does this, he's still popular in the eyes of many Republicans, but it really just splits the ticket. And it's not the ticket even, it splits people's loyalties on where they want to go. And 1912 comes up. And, of course, this is the election we're talking about. The New Yorkers come through for Sherman, and they renominate him, which is really an unprecedented thing at this time. It didn't used to be that if you were in office, you know, now it's like if you're in office and you want to run again, you're going to get nominated. That's just the way things work. And then back in the day, it had been almost 100 years, a little shy of 100 years since someone had been renominated for vice president. Now, part of that's because they kept dying, but that's beside the point. John C. Calhoun was the last one back in 1828. So they renominate him, and he says, hey, I am getting sick.
Yeah, but he's like, but I'm going to be fine. And right. Hey, doctor, you don't know what it's like to be so driven by political ambitions as I do, and you're wrong. He's diagnosed with Bright's disease. That's what we're talking about, in 1904. Man, Ben, I was doing some reading on Bright's disease. It sounds painful.
It is not fun sounding at all.
But yeah, he's got this, and his health is deteriorating. His doctor's like, dude, you just need to not run again. And Sherman's like, I'm going to. You ain't seen nothing yet. And, well, 6 days after his 57th birthday and less than a week before the election, he dies. Man, why do I have to give that news?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was kind of coming. Like, people probably could have predicted it was coming at some point.
Yeah, if you would have had 24-hour news channels back in the day, they would have, I don't know. Roosevelt probably would have won. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm predicting something wrong, but what ends up happening is you got a little bit of a crisis, because what does Taft do? He can't really nominate another guy like a week before the election. So essentially you do have a dead man on the ticket. But officially what happens is Nicholas Murray Butler was designated to receive the electoral votes that Sherman would have received. So there are procedures in place if that does happen. I think, have we done an episode on that? Because Horace Greeley passed away.
We have. We've done episodes on all the people who passed away, I think, but we never did one on the actual like procedures and stuff like that.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do an episode on that someday. But what you need to know is the Republicans selected Nicholas Murray Butler to receive Sherman's electoral votes. So it wouldn't have been a constitutional crisis or anything like that.
But it didn't matter, because Taft and then Butler come in third place in the election. They only get 8 electoral votes, and Woodrow Wilson wins the election. Thanks a lot, Theodore Roosevelt. You used to be a nice guy, then you went off and shot a ton of animals and screwed up other people's elections. But, you know, now we're going to get to talk about Woodrow Wilson here in the future. The vice presidency didn't get filled during the time between when he passes away and when Marshall comes into office in March of the next year. So there you have it. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So if you're alive in the first decade and a half of the 1900s, James Sherman, you would have known about him. You would have said, hey, this guy carries a lot of influence. And then everybody forgets about him.
It's kind of sad, really. I mean, I know we've said this 1,000 times on this show, but it's really, there are some people who did so much. And I mean, we're just talking about political figures. If you think about like Farmer Joe down the road, who turned his community around just by making sure that they didn't go hungry, like those kind of people too. It's just crazy how people just, you know, we forget about people that doesn't get documented and recorded.
Yeah. At least we're talking about them here on a podcast.
That's right.
100 years after the fact. But, you know, go out there, be the change that the world needs to your community. And, you know, it does matter.
If you leave us a review, and we are still doing this podcast in 100 years, we'll talk about you too. Even if you don't leave us a review, if we were doing this podcast in 100 years, we'd talk about you. I promise. But since we're probably not going to be alive in 100 years and you haven't left this review yet, you should do that at electioncollege.com/review. It's over on iTunes. You can also give us a little star and recommend us on Overcast. And we would really appreciate if you did both of those things even.
Yeah. And when you subscribe, little angels dance. And I'm sure a Sherman somewhere celebrates.
Do you think angels dance? Like legit angels. I don't know.
I think they probably.
But I don't see how they could.
It's angels.
Thanks, everybody. We are also on all the social media channels. Find us at Election College and say, hey, we love interacting with you, and we would really appreciate it if you interacted with us as well.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online, schedule package pickups through the dashboard, and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.